Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is MC Blair, and you are listening to Your Health. So we're going to have some headlines. First off, we've got Rick Bayless. He's a cook up in Chicago, very famous celebrity chef. He has a restaurant called Frontera Grill, which is a wonderful place. I've been there before, and it was just absolutely wonderful. Well, when he first opened that restaurant 30 years ago, he said Chicago was like a food wasteland, other than the the packing houses and all that sort of thing. And so he lent money to farmers so that they could grow food for his restaurants. Right? Smart guy. So there's your local food. Well, his mission continues this spring with a new partnership. It's called Family Farmed, which is a Chicago nonprofit, and it trains farmers and mentors and hooks them up with local entrepreneurs. And it would provide a boost for Family Farmed, which runs a six-month food business accelerator program that does set the mentors and the entrepreneurs up together. And so they are setting up local organically grown farms right there around the area to provide more than just his restaurants now, but also other restaurants in the area, which is really great. And if you don't know who Rick Bayless is, he's actually the brother. If you're a sports fan out there, guys, he's the brother of who's the other Bayless? Doggone it. I had it earlier. Anyways, it's funny. Oh, well, so much for that idea. Maybe I'm not as big a sports fan as I thought, right? But anyway, he wants to set up a local distribution center also for the local food, kind of like our local food hub, you know, so that'd be pretty good. He said he wanted to see a thriving agricultural economy in the place that I'm doing my work, which is chef work, cooking. He says every place I've been in the world where there's really good agriculture, there's good food on the table. And where there's not good agriculture, it's mediocre. So, you know, we're doing this here in Charlottesville as well with the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, Schoolyard Gardens, the Sustainability Initiative, and the Food Summit at UVA. And speaking of that, Chicago was awarded $1 million USDA farming grant, which is great. So the USDA is actually encouraging the local organic type farming. They have assistance for people to transition from conventional to organic, which is really good. And that was only one of 45 projects in the U.S. awarded by the USDA. A total of $26.6 million are going to these farmers and encouraging urban farmers. And, of course, they've gained momentum in Chicago. Obviously, we know about edible schoolyards in Berkeley. Just wonderful, wonderful things going on. And the city is matching funds through an NPO called NeighborSpace, which is repurposing city-owned land for farming. What a great idea. You know, get away. And I think that if this continues to go the way it is, it's the fastest growing segment of food in the country is the organic. And if this continues to go and they continue to move in the urban direction and community direction, the factory farms eventually will go away. There'll be no need for them because the demand will go down so much. And, you know, I realize that's many years from now, but to get rid of that. But anyway, we also today we have Amy Leeser. She was here a couple of weeks ago. She's a nurse practitioner at Forest Lakes Medical Center, and she's our guest host today. I probably should have introduced her at the top of the show, but hi, Amy. How are you today?
Good morning. Thanks Good morning. For
yeah.
me. I'm so happy to be back and excited about the show today. So,
yeah, I
got a call, and you let me know what's on the table today, and I had to be here, so I'm really excited.
Right. Awesome. That's awesome. So you know, we talked the last time, food is medicine. And I know later on we're going to be talking to Alexander Oleson from the University of Virginia. He's here, and he's got some hydroponic news for us. He's got a great system that he's developed, and so that's going to be I think that'll be fun to talk about how and you know talk about. That's the most urban. Yeah, I mean, that's right there in your home. You know, that's about as local as you can get.
Yeah, you're talking about moving that, you know, the direction that we're going and going more for this local, organic, and away from the factory farms. And I think that I'm excited to hear about hydroponics as a way to move this forward, because I think people want real action items. They want to know how do I make this happen? How do I make this transition? And so I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. You know, the typical American diet is full of processed food, right? Typical American diet and prepared foods, which are most of those are pretty processed, with very few fresh fruits and veggies. And then it seems as we become more affluent, that increases. our, you know, going out to restaurants and stopping here and stopping there and getting whatever's offered.
It is convenient.
It is. It's convenient, except we're starving ourselves. You know, we starve ourselves of the necessary nutrients to be healthy. And, of course, when we do this, you know all about it. You see the people, and they're sick. And I had doctors, more than one doctor, tell me, Amy, that we all get cancer. Now, it may not kill you, but we're going to get it. That's kind of sad, you know, to think about it, to even... I mean, it's like, what? You know, what's going on? Why do we all get this, you know, disease? And according to Professor Lauren Cordain, University of Colorado, 80% of Americans don't get enough nutrients. Building blocks. They're basic, right?
Yeah, and you know, food is information. And I think that the food that we put in our body either moves us towards health or towards disease. And so everything that we put in our body, it's important to be aware that it's moving us towards health or away from health.
Yeah.
It's information.
It is. It is. And it's like, you know, eating the wrong thing, you know, conventional, basically, gets us toxins in our body. And, of course, the more toxins you add to your body, the less good building blocks are going to happen, you know. And we're setting the stage for chronic disease.
Yeah, food tells our bodies how to function by signaling exactly when and how each different type of cell should behave in different situations. So, for example, certain foods offer cell protection, heart health, or anti-inflammatory effects. And so we want the best information to reach our cells in order to achieve optimal functioning. Mm-hmm. So we are what we eat, but we also are what we can't eliminate. And so when you talk about the ubiquitous toxin exposure in our environment, that's what I think of is,
yeah.
We are what we eat, and we are what we are exposed to, and we also are what we can't eliminate.
I know.
So eating nutrients that support our body's natural detoxification in the liver will help us eliminate what we don't want to be.
Wow. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, there's ways that, you know, you can cleanse your body as well. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. I've got a whole rant, folks, on cadmium, mainly cadmium poisoning, but also other heavy metals. And then I'm going to give you the way to clean those heavy metals out.
Looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, that's
I got a sneak peek of this before the show, so I'm excited to dig in and hear.
You know, and it's sad because when a person has that typical diet with all those processed foods, their children run the risk of being born with their jaws too small, which can obviously do crooked, you know, cause crooked teeth, but believe it or not, smaller brains. So it's like the symptoms of an autoimmune disease before you even start to grow. You know, talk about setting the stage for failure. It's just, it's sad. We're starving ourselves. And they say that's one in three people will get type 2 diabetes, be obese, or both and it's one in two for African American and Latinos, you know, and that does not have to be. It just doesn't have to be.
Yeah, we talked a little bit in the last show about spectrum of vulnerability, and mm-hmm. so, you know, kids being more susceptible, and also the cumulative effects over time. So when you're talking about some of these health effects, it can be really hard to grasp them, particularly because it wouldn't be ethical for us to give someone something that is potentially harmful. So right. we can kind of talk about the precautionary principle and how to apply that. But I think you touched on an important point in that when we look at exposures within the environment and food and looking at the potential health effects, it can be really hard to narrow it down. But I think it is important to think about the spectrum of vulnerability and who is the most vulnerable population.
So, yeah, the kids. Mm,
yeah.
And then, of course, with the schoolyard gardens and the UACC working so hard. And by the way, folks, we're going to have the schoolyard garden folks on next week. So be sure and stay tuned for that. It's going to be another good show right here at To Your Health on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, the voice of the resistance in Charlottesville, 94.7. And we're talking with Amy Leeser. She's a registered nurse nurse practitioner at Forest Lakes Medical Center. And in the next segment, we're going to be talking with Alexander Oleson from the University of Virginia and about hydroponics. So, they took the diets of the African hunter-gatherers, you know, many years ago, right? And the Inuits who are around today, now those are two completely different diets. But when they were analyzed, it found out that those diets exceeded the recommended daily allowance between 2 and 10-fold, according to Dr. O'Keefe from the Mayo Clinic. And to get the right nutrients, 3 cups of greens per day, which gives you your vitamin B, A, C, and vitamin K, which are very, very important. 3 cups of sulfur-rich foods, the cruciferous, the broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, red cabbage is better, turnips, radishes, collards, I mentioned kale before, and also the onion family, mushrooms, asparagus, and these also cleanse your liver of the toxins and kidneys of the toxins. And then 3 cups of colored veggies, red and yellow peppers, carrots, berries, and they contain the flavonoids and the polyphenols. These are important antioxidants, support your mitochondria and your retina and your brain health.
Well, I'm ready to eat after that.
I know.
All those things sound incredible.
And then, of course, you've got your wild salmon and your grass-fed meats, beef and lamb, and organ meat. Also seaweed, which provides you iodine for your myelin coating that coats our nerves, which, by the way, folks, is the coating that degrades in autoimmune diseases. That's every single one of them. The myelin coating degrades, and we can actually eat the right foods to bring that back. And that's why, they have studies of people that have gone with diet and have stopped the symptoms of MS, Parkinson's, Huntington's, and a couple of stories of reversing Alzheimer's and dementia, which is, wow, you know. But, it does cost more. Got to say it. It costs more to eat properly, but you actually pay more in doctor's visits, the drugs, surgeries, lost work, and most importantly, the future of our unhealthy children. It's amazing, you know, what food can do for you. Amy, I know you see people at your practice on a pretty regular basis you're obviously eating the wrong things. Are you able to at least get any positive response on counseling?
Yeah, that's a really great question. That's a broad question.
Yeah, it is a broad question.
But I do. I love to engage with people about it because I think that people get in habits, and humans are creatures of habit. And so just like as I listen to you talk about the red cabbage and the smoked salmon and all these different foods that really taste good, and I think sometimes as I begin to engage patients in this conversation about nutrition and how important it is for them, that resonates. But sometimes what resonates even more is, ooh, those foods sound good, and that sounds like fun. And we talk about spices, you know, turmeric is really healthy for you, and cinnamon, and all these things. And it can be really fun to begin to learn how to prepare foods in a different way. Being a chef is an incredible career. I mean, chefs are artists. And
yes.
So engaging in that as an art and also, again, I'm excited to hear about hydroponics again. What a cool way to introduce this into your own home in a really easy way. And so I find that as I begin to talk to patients, they see, oh, this can be fun, and also the food can be more satiating, which is also appealing. As I talk to them about the roller coaster of the refined sugars and the refined carbohydrates, and they start to tell me, you know, I feel tired and I feel sluggish at certain times of the day, and I say, oh, well, if we had a meal with some smoked salmon and some steamed broccoli with some butter on top, and you know, you start to engage them in that, then they start to see, oh, well maybe I won't have those ups and downs, and that sounds like fun. So.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's amazing. People don't realize that that sugar, especially, you know, it fires you up and then drops you right down. It's like alcohol. Right? It's a stimulant. Well, no, it's a depressant.
It really is a roller coaster. And you're right. I find that a lot of people just don't realize that that is the cause of some of their fatigue and a lot of their symptoms. And they just haven't made that connection. And so it is really, really fun for me to see that when they are able to make some changes and they are able to get over the hump of getting off those refined sugars and those refined carbohydrates, and they find foods that are more satiating, then they feel better and they make that connection, and that's really fun.
Yeah. So you see them later that actually followed your advice, and you see a nice change in them.
Oh yeah, in their mood, in their energy, in their ability to focus, and sometimes in their overall vitality, and often in their overall vitality, and just motivation and hunger for life as well.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, those ups and downs of the processed food and the refined sugars, it's really a rock and roll life, and it's hard. So
it's
fun to see them on the other end and to see the benefits once they do find better nutrition in
their
life.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's got to be rewarding. That's got to be tremendously rewarding. We're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Alexander Oleson from the University of Virginia. You're listening to Your Health, 94.7, the voice of the resistance, progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're back. This is MC Blair, and we're talking with Amy Leeser, nurse practitioner at Forest Lakes Medical Center. And we are really blessed today. We have a guy here from the University of Virginia, Alexander Oleson, who has come up with a hydroponic system that's it right there in your home, and it's affordable. But I'll let him talk now. I just wanted to introduce you. This is Alexander Oleson. How are you today, Alexander?
Very good, thank you.
Good
morning.
Good.
Thank you for having me on. I'd actually just like to start by weighing in on what Amy was saying
about
some of the refined products you see out there. It's actually very interesting. Not many people know about macro and micronutrients, of which you can only get micronutrients from organic produce, of which all of the health stuff promoted as healthy in the supermarket, labeled as healthy, labeled as organic, is often not that. If it's been through any kind of processing, it lacks those nutrients, and those are the nutrients which you're not on the labeling, which are the things that give you the energy, they revitalize you, and why you as a nurse see the people getting more energy, you see their skin clear up. It's that kind of thing that is completely overlooked by the current state of the health industry.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about you, you know, a brief bio, how you came into this.
So I am currently in my last year at the University of Virginia. I am an international student from London in the United Kingdom. I've been developing this hydroponic system for home use for over a year now. And the concept is, unlike other systems out there, this would be a high-yield home system. That removes all of the time, knowledge, and sort of hassles of previous systems. Because it's definitely, there's stuff out there, but it's incredibly expensive. It is ugly. it is complicated. And, you know, I don't think, you know, everyone loves health. Everyone loves the concept. But people don't want to be sitting there measuring pH and conductivity, even though it's sort of elementary science. It is, it's not something people really want to be doing. So if someone was able to take away all of those, you know, technical constraints, and make it a sort of plug-and-go home appliance, I think this could be the start of something, and very much part of this revolution you're talking about. There are a lot of people, it's a huge movement of people who want to take back power of their health. I went into a supermarket on my way here, actually, to check. It's $4.99 for a bag of pre-chopped salad, you know, with your lettuce, kale, arugula, this basics. $4.99 for that. Your average head of lettuce loses 40% of its nutritional value within 6 hours of harvesting.
I heard that.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of these water-based plants, especially in the U.S. diet, it's amazing. You know, everyone's sort of a salad is healthy, yet it's 90% water. And of that, it's lost almost all of its nutritional value. And when you eat it, 3 weeks after it's been harvested, it's been stored in a chemical compressed bag, you're eating a husk of whatever it is that it once was. And certainly with hydroponics, you know, it's an amazing technology, really. It's actually been around for millennia. It provided the foundation of the Egyptian Empire, the Aztecs. They all did it, and I think they must have been onto something. The ancient Egyptians were able to grow all of their crops in 4 months.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and that enabled them to spend the rest of the year building pyramids. And you know, you think they're onto something. And
yeah,
it allows you, so the hydroponics today sort of fallen out of fashion in favor of these factory farms, industrial sort of combine harvesters desecrating fields, fertilizing them, desecrating them again. You can grow up to 10 times the yield per square foot with up to 90% less water. Which, I don't know, I didn't feel I need to explain that. That's a pretty good deal, given that industrial agriculture accounts for 70% of the water usage in the U.S. I think that's a lot of room for improvement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think, hydroponics itself has been done. A lot of community initiatives supporting it. Kind of actually going off what you were saying about organic farms. There are a lot of, in underdeveloped areas, people coming in, taking over brownfield sites, of, you know, less than an acre around that, and on that you can provide enough food year round to really impact hundreds and hundreds of people's diets using hydroponics. And that's actually where I kind of got the idea. Name slips my mind now, but it's in Richmond, Virginia, and they grow. It's sort of a community initiative where people work for the food that they get. And it's on less than an acre, and they're feeding hundreds and hundreds of families off that.
Oh, wow.
And it's great. And, you know, this is the kind of thing, and there are a lot of movements like this around the world, but I was looking at this, I thought it was amazing. You know, very sustainable, very healthy, and bringing nutrition into people's diets. And you were talking about the scale of vulnerability, Amy. And it's very much, it's tied to inequality, and it's not segments. It is in the U.S. I found it amazing coming over here. Not to say that the U.K. is much healthier at all, but you can get cheap fast food here anywhere, 24/7.
Yep.
And you look for a salad. That yeah, good luck. But no, it's interesting to see. But you can eat a lot of calories very cheaply, and that I guess is something to be admired in a way. I do disagree with the movements that sort of hate on agribusiness. I think their practices, their legal practices, are a symptom of a wider problem. But the fact that this is one of the first countries in history to where obesity is the problem, not hungry, I think, hunger even, I think that is something to be heralded. And in a sort of societal sense, that is a remarkable achievement. That being said, the fact that you would get sued if I said anything bad about it on the radio is another problem in itself. I think the hydroponics, and certainly my aim with... the company I'm starting is called Babylon Micro Farms, and they, soon enough, you will be able to buy these personalized systems, which with the concept being at least they will be like another home appliance that will produce as much as you grow about 100 plants at a time. You can grow a head of lettuce, kale, arugula, your average salad, any salad crop in under a month.
Whoa.
Yeah. So yeah, you're looking at high yields, you really meaningfully impact someone's diet. And so far the sustainability initiative we're launching at the University of Virginia, which has been, it's great. So a lot of these universities, especially UVA, have a sort of large mandate for sustainability, of course, because they're the leading front of research into these things. I think they, unlike the current political climate, they are aware of the changes that need to be made and the next generation that are being educated towards it. And this is to build 5 prototypes of my design and put them around the university as sort of demonstration models and have professors beta test them.
Wow.
Yeah, and certainly sets the precedent.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
I mean, just, oh my gosh. So then the university is behind this.
I say that. This is just a sustainability initiative. I'd love to get them behind it.
Okay.
I'm sure there's a lot of scope for that, given it ticks every box of sustainability. And the next ones we want to build is solar powered, and then you'd have a zero energy, 90% less water, food greenhouse, it's that kind of thing. And we'll see how the university goes, but I currently will be developing it myself off this sustainability initiative.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to have some people from the Food Summit Sustainability Initiative on the show.
We will be on display at the Food Summit.
Excellent. Well, when I see Tanya her folks, I'll ask about that.
Put in a good word for me.
Oh, absolutely. That's get everybody behind these things. There are so many ways, folks, that this community can get together and work in concert with all these small, groups. And eventually grow enough to feed the whole community.
Absolutely.
It'd be great.
I think certainly this community movement of sort of home-growing, like holistic living, good non-factory farm foods, there's a huge market for it, and it's definitely growing. Certainly in the U.S., it's a $3.5 billion industry, just the home gardening. It's a big old, which, of course, I hope hydroponics will play a big part in. But I certainly think if you had a home system which removes all of the difficulties, all of the technical measurements are automated, that you'd be able to see almost disrupt this local movement in as much as you'd actually do it yourself, because the time and effort is it's removed, and you'd have these things just growing all your fruit and veg for you.
I'm curious how the product that you're working on is different than some of the other things that are available now.
Well, good question. Well, as I said earlier, most of them, it's actually remarkable. There is a lot of stuff out there. It said the technical measurements and the main things, it's not complicated, but it's enough. Like, I don't think anyone, as with most projects, it is ease of use rather than anything else. And on top of that, there's a lot of things out there incredibly expensive. Anything comparable to mine is costing upwards of $5,000 and is, for the most part, a network of white PVC pipings, which is certainly why I thought there was a big gap in the market, because it's kind of absurd in my mind. So we're looking to come in and undercut that with something that is so easy to use. It would be a home appliance. And
how many plants can you grow?
So on these prototypes, it's 94. Bear in mind that is also, you can change it, because certain plants are obviously a lot bigger than others. This is being worked out using salad crops, which is your sort of kale, that kind of thing.
Right.
But you can grow any above ground vegetable on them, from blueberries, strawberries to medical marijuana,
tomatoes, all sorts of things. Still illegal, but they're working on it.
Not in Virginia. But certainly that's not what I set out for, but everyone I speak to, that's the first question that comes up.
Right. That's funny.
There's a lot of, and that's the idea, at least with ours, and unlike you asking what's different, it's a lot of ones out there are tailored to certain plants, some of them actually much higher yields. If you really micromanage it and control the environment, you can grow some stuff incredibly quickly. However, you're limited to those things, whereas mine would be an in-between, which gives you, the consumer, the choice of what you put. And then you'd speak to us, and we'd send you the nutrients and the seeds to go with it, and it would just be a package, plug and go.
So then that would be like every so often you would need the nutrients, obviously.
Whenever you harvest, we see, and it would all be, because it's controlled, it is a fairly give or take a couple of days, you know the cycle of growth, which definitely gives room for you to sort of go online or order a new set, maybe even get a ping on your phone before it orders it for you.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. You're listening to Your Health. I'm MC Blair. We're talking with Amy Leeser from Forest Lakes Medical Center and hydroponics with Alexander Oleson from the University of Virginia, right here at 94.7 WPVC. Alexander, let's see, I asked you how many plants. You said 94, which is up to 94, I guess.
Yeah.
And you said you could arrange it and grow smaller plants or more, you know, that sort of thing. How far along are you? You're pretty close, aren't you?
Very, in what sense?
As far as
getting retail?
Exactly.
Yeah, how far are we? We've been developing it for over a year. I'd like to think that we'd definitely be on sale by the end of this year, if not a lot sooner. It sort of depends on a lot of things. But as of this week, we'll have the sustainability initiative at UVA up and running, which, of course, is a huge chance to get feedback, test
well,
them.
Well, exactly. You'll have your prototype at the food summit, right?
Yeah. I believe so, yeah. We're still in talks with the Office of Sustainability. But, yeah, in terms of sort of high-impact places to have them, I think UVA is a very good start.
Earlier I was just thinking related to the measurements of the pH and such. Does that mean that the average consumer would be more successful in one of these home type hydroponic systems by being able to do those measurements? Is that the difference?
Would you mean as opposed to planting in soil? Or
So you were saying that the difference between the product that you're working on and some of the products that are already on the market is that you're able to do the measurements. And so I'm wondering, does that just offer a wider variety of produce? Does that offer higher chance of success? What is this?
Definitely a higher chance of success. And it's mainly removing the time and hassle of it. Cause it's not so much it's complex, but the parameters are fairly set per. So the nutrients are dissolved in the water, and within that there is an optimum amount and an optimum pH for the plants. And you obviously want to keep it as constant as possible. And the way it's done currently, you'd have to go and measure it by hand, add in a corresponding amount of nutrient or pH adjuster. There's room for variation, which is bad for the plants. There's also that's going to take you some time. All things that I think are really prohibiting people from doing it. And so if we are able to keep that at the optimal level by an automated system, you remove all of that, you keep the plants at the optimum growth time, and you remove all that time constraints for the
consumer. So it's basically just plug and play, if you will.
I hope so.
Or plug and grow.
we will see. But I think it's looking like that, yeah.
I'm also curious, could you do plant starts in there? So say if I want to grow okra, which may be bigger than or something that would be a bigger plant.
So certainly the initial design is around a 6-foot by 4-foot area, so you've got a lot of room. You can grow anything. And this is the great thing about ours is it is variable. You have this very big area, so you could grow two plants on there, two massive plants. I don't know what you'd be growing that's that big, but you know there's the room for it, or 94 heads of lettuce. So it's great to have the options, and I think that's what people want, rather than being constrained to a high-yield system that's dedicated to one plant or a group of plants.
Are you getting good response from folks that you talk about or talk to?
Certainly, I think we're definitely getting a lot of interest, certainly around the university, and I know university towns are sort of ideal places for this. You've got, progressive voices of Charlottesville, like this place. Certainly a lot of people, and hydroponics itself has clearly got a lot of selling points, given how sustainable it is, given the yield, and given the fact, we're facing droughts here and there, food crisis here and there. This is, without question, going to play a large part in the food security of the future. Whether or not my product will be a part of that, time will tell. But I think, without question, this is going to be the way of producing food in the future.
So I've heard a lot about aquaponics, and now you're talking about hydroponics, and so the difference there and how the nutrients are inputted is interesting.
Okay, so aquaponics, same concept. So hydroponics it's a water culture system where the plants are suspended in water and absorb nutrients dissolved within it. aquaponics, rather than adding in nutrients yourself, you have fish that would eat the plants, and their excrement, I guess, would be the fertilizer, which is, I guess, closer to what the Egyptians and Aztecs use. It's a lot of what, you know, preppers, it's your closed loop. Technically, you'd never have to add in anything, technically. Hydroponics, on the other hand, is slightly purer. You'd add in nutrients tailored to the plants that you're growing. So one of the big things, one of the only complaints I've heard is that hydroponics, food grown hydroponically doesn't taste as good as stuff grown organically, which is mainly based on the fact that it's sort of, a lot of the tomatoes you'd eat in the supermarket, you may or may not know, probably almost certainly grown hydroponically. And this is apparently, they don't taste as good. And my argument to that would be it's probably the pollutants in the soil that make them taste different, some better than others. That being said, there's also a lot of room with hydroponics to tailor the nutrients more closely to that to introduce better flavors. Because as with humans, you know, plants have their macro and micronutrients, of which they can grow off their macro ones, but it's the micro ones that make the difference. It's the one, they're the ones that make them more holistic and taste better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I'll be darned. That's amazing. Well, we're going to take a little break here, and we will be back. We're talking to Alexander Oleson from the Sustainability Initiative at University of Virginia. Welcome. We are back. We're talking with Alexander Oleson. He's got a hydroponic system that can go into everybody's home. It will be affordable. I'm not going to say anything about prices right now. Still developing it, but it'll definitely be affordable. And you can email him at a05xb@virginia.edu. That's a05xb@virginia.edu. If you have any personal questions, or about what he's doing, and it's amazing. We talked a little while back, and yep. You had mentioned that each plant selects the nutrients it needs for proper growth, even if there's many more nutrients in there.
Yeah, well, there's some science to be tested on that. It's obviously within reason, but plants, you know, they're fairly clever. They live in their design. They've evolved to live in soil where there's a variety of good, bad, you know, there's everything in there, and they select what they need. So, you know, within reason, as long as you're not poisoning them with sort of overwhelming them with certain things, there's a lot of room to.
So you don't want to add any cadmium to there, right?
No cadmium is strictly off the menu.
That's good.
But yes, certainly the principal aim of this project is to develop a home appliance which enable people. Empower them to take back growing their own fresh produce and give them a year-round means of doing it that you'd be able to grow on a relatively small area up to 10 times the yield of what you would in a conventional garden. So this home appliance would compensate for you having a large garden, which I know most people don't have these days. Or you could have it on your roof, on your balcony. And, you know, by plug-and-go nutrients, it removes all of the hassle and time constraints. And if we make it cheap enough, and these will hopefully be under $1,000, you're looking at something that's an investment piece. It will pay for itself within a couple of years of the food that produces. And I think that is certainly heading in the right direction of food production, idealistic or not. But I, you know, we talk about this movement for sustainability, and people want this. It's clear there's an avid movement for it, you know, maybe more on the West Coast than the East Coast,
yeah.
But you know, if people care that much, then of course they'll want to do it themselves. And I think that's what I was saying about perhaps disrupting this sort of harking back to the community farms that might, you know, bring it back. I think that's a wonderful ideal, but I think there could be other ways around it. You know, and people could just do it themselves.
Right, and there'll be a few that'll do that, and which is great. But I see several of your operation of your systems maybe being adopted by some of these urban agricultural
there's a lot of room for that,
places
definitely.
Because it's all set up, ready to go.
Yeah.
We had talked last week with Todd Niemeyer of the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and he was talking about rooftops gardens. And, of course, you've got a big weight issue with soil and all that sort of thing. Well, you know, this could be something that could be stuck on roofs of a large complex.
Absolutely.
Everybody chips in, and you supply the whole complex with their salad greens.
And that kind of overlaps. There are some people doing that. I hope that this will come in at a slightly different angle, but they will definitely be modular. So there is a lot of room for expansion. I hope to see people start growing one crop, and they're like, oh, I like this, you know, go and buy another one. well, of course. and you'd have a couple, and it would actually be sort of sustainable. It's micro-local urban farming. It's the catchphrase that I see online, which we hope to be a part of.
Oh, my.
This system, I think, you know, when I talk to patients about making some of these changes and choosing some healthier foods, getting more nutrition, some of the major barriers that I see for them is cost and space. And so cost, space, and time, certainly, but also knowledge. And I think that you're addressing all of these things. This is something that's affordable. You've removed a lot of the knowledge component by being able to just read a screen and make sure that they're getting the nutrients that it needs, and then also the space issue, certainly, because it can fit inside the house, outside of the house. Yeah. And so I think this is a great system because it's removing the major barriers that I see happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's exactly, well, thank you. I think that's exactly what we're trying to target. And I think, you know, they're not the great thing in many ways. So certainly the gap that I saw is that these aren't huge constraints, but they're just enough that your average person won't do them. These are not the, you know, groundbreaking technological developments, but it is just assembling it in a way that makes it so that you could just do it. Because I think everyone likes the idea of growing their own food, certainly, whether they have the time or energy to do it. It's completely different. Luckily, it's quite cheap. You can buy seeds incredibly cheaply. And hopefully you'll be able to buy one of our systems very cheaply. And there's certainly, you know, if you remove that, it's a great thing. And the educational component is something that I actually didn't even consider when I first started it, but with the sustainability initiative we're launching, a lot of professors at UVA and other places have come up and said, you know, we'd love to see these in the back of classrooms. You know, they're saying, one of them said, my kid's elementary school has a vegetable garden, and they go out to it, you know, once, twice a year. It takes too long. It's got weeds. It's muddy and boring, basically. Whereas mine, I don't know, it grows a crop a month, and it glows with purple grow lights. I think it's pretty cool. And I hope that they, it would be great to see them, the sort of educational side of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I also see, you know, when patients come in, that, and particularly when their health is... They come to me when their health is down and they're sick, and that can be overwhelming and that can be a major expense. And so taking on something, a new challenge like starting a garden taking on something new is already challenging. It's challenging when they're already sort of overwhelmed with health issues. And so this is something that is affordable and approachable. So
Absolutely, and you know, it's very well, as we were saying, it's very well documented, well, aside from eating healthily, what that does to you, it's very well documented what people who actually grow their own food, how much healthier they are, because you're involved in the sort of holistic process of it, so you understand it, I think you appreciate it more, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of satisfaction to eating something you've grown. And this isn't to say that you'd be able to plug and not do anything, of course you have to do something, you'd be doing a lot less than current hydroponic systems, which hopefully will be take it down to a level where starting a garden is no longer, you know, getting a spade out and digging holes and that in the cold and rain. You do it in your sitting room, but you'd still have to tend to them. But
yeah,
it's not complicated.
I think you're also speaking to empowerment, too, because when people are not feeling well, there can be a real sense of loss of control as well. So regaining that ability to grow your own vegetables and take control of your own health is... I think you're really touching on something that's really important.
Absolutely. And we, the future of it, so certainly we're looking into designing, we have designed a wall-mounted one, so hopefully that would take it inside. And, you know, because it can grow any plant, well, above-ground plant, the sort of non-root vegetable, should I say, you can plant it full of flowers, you can do whatever you want, and you have this. Essentially bringing back sort of a green environment into your urban setting, which is... certainly in the future, and I'm certainly not the only person doing it, but I think we've got a better angle on it than most.
Yeah. Yeah, and variety too. Just the fact that you can grow such a huge variety of plants. And so if folks are beginning to adventure more into the culinary field and use more spices, it's just so easy to grab something that's already in your house and, very accessible.
And certainly one of the things we aim, one of our, so I tell the team working with you, you've got to make it as simple so that your kids could do it when they come back from school. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. Because, you know, they could actually just go, you really involve them with it, then the sort of whole farm to table takes on a new meaning when you can literally pick it off one table and put it on another.
Yeah. I know, you know, I was working on doing my seed order for this year because it's getting time for me to start my seeds under the grow light and get them ready to go into the garden. And some of the seeds that I wanted to pick out were a little bit adventurous. You know, they were a little more on the expensive side. And I said, okay, well, I'll just choose a few things and I'll get adventurous with a few things. But I know, okay, well, in the Virginia climate is great, but I know I have all the bugs in the garden, and there's all these barriers. And so I think that with this system, I would be a lot more adventurous some of the seeds that I would grow and get some of those really beautiful. What is the spiral cabbage that you can? Some of the really beautiful vegetables that you could be successful with.
Well, if you'd like to buy one of our systems, I absolutely do take pre-orders. So.
Okay. Yeah, and if you need anyone to help with this experimental phase,
we are always looking for people, just from feedback. Welcome to come and check out the Sustainability Initiative UVA. As is anyone else listening, they should be on display in pretty public places with some sort of posters explaining
really cool.
what's happening, you know, where to go.
So they can email you and get those answers as to
please do. Anyone listening, reach out because it's always good to get feedback.
And as soon as you get your logistics worked out, you're going to have a website.
The website is built. We have some technical issues with actually getting it up. But,
I understand.
As these things always seem to happen. But, within the next couple of weeks, you'll be able to check it out.
That is great. Well, folks, you're listening to Your Health. I'm MC Blair. We were talking with Alexander Oleson from the Sustainability Initiative at the University of Virginia about his hydroponic system that will be available. It's affordable and can be used in your home. We are also talking with Amy Leeser from Forest Lakes Medical Center. She's a nurse practitioner up there. And we were talking briefly about cadmium. I mentioned that. And I got to tell you, cadmium. It's rare, but it's widely dispersed element found naturally in the environment. Well, it's like arsenic. Well, then the USDA came out and they said, well, we've got an acceptable level of cadmium in fertilizers. And, you know, as long as you're using that, then it's okay. Well, unfortunately, cadmium is a highly toxic substance. It will make you sick, even if it's taken in low levels over a long period of time. It's one of the reasons why doctors tell us we're going to get cancer, because of these acceptable levels of heavy metals. It is refined during zinc production. You've seen these batteries with zinc and cadmium batteries. It's where it comes. It's released in the environment through mining and smelting. It has various uses in industrial things, but it enters the food chain from the plants of contaminated soil or phosphate fertilizers, sewage sludge. It's released from landfills airborne. It can travel through the air, and then when the rain comes down, it takes it to the ground, puts it in the soil, and taken right back through the conventional crops. It gets into the drinking water, unfortunately, contaminated by mining. And, of course, we've just seen where some of the EPA regulations are going to be rolled back and allow people to dump coal sludge and, you know, the like into the estuaries. Well, that's smart, you know. Soft water tends to dissolve cadmium and the lead from the water lines, and the levels typically higher when left to stagnate in the lines. So even extremely low levels over a long period of time can make you sick. It's amazing. Of course, tobacco has a very high level. So does rice and other cereal grains. Potatoes, other vegetables take up cadmium. Cadmium is found in meat, especially sweet meats, livers, and kidneys. In certain areas, cadmium concentrations are elevated in shellfish and mushrooms. Now, I had a I had a coach one time tell me that he didn't mind. Actually, he was also an extremely successful entrepreneur. He's a billionaire now. And he told me, he said, I don't mind people, my people coming up and disputing one of my policies. I don't mind that as long as they have a solution, right? So that's what he said. And I can see the handwriting on the wall or field, if you will, this, which should be illegal to put phosphorus fertilizers on crops, should totally be illegal. But if you've got this, you can eat certain foods. I talked to them before, the sulfur-rich foods. I mentioned what they were, but also community-based agriculture. This is what we're talking about, and this is what is the answer is to get away from these conventional foods, you know, because if it's community-based and it's organically grown, doesn't have to be certified organic. It just has to be organically grown without chemical fertilizers. What Alexander was talking about in his hydroponics, it's perfect. And I just wanted to just say that we have a chance to control our own food system, ending the constant barrage of added toxins from an industrial farm system bound by stockholders' goal of high profits and not necessarily quality food. And go ahead, Alexander.
Well, yeah, certainly organic, local, organically, and hydroponically, the opportunity to grow food without no GMO, no pesticides or inorganic fertilizer it has to be the future.
Absolutely.
You know, no cadmium and any of that.
Yes, I know.
It could do wonders to save the natural environment. And I think
that's exactly right. Thank you so much for being here, Alexander.
Well, thank you.
And Amy, you know, you can come back anytime as a guest host. You just absolutely love it.
I've learned so much today.
Oh, that is really good. Another great show. Well, next week we're going to have Jeanette Abbey Nader on with a couple of her folks, and that's going to be, she is in charge of Schoolyard Gardens. And next week after that, we're going to have Michael Clark from Planet Earth Diversified. So we've got a good lineup coming up for you. And thanks for tuning in to Your Health. I'm MC Blair, and just saying a toast to your health.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.